Good morning. It's about 19 minutes away from 8 o'clock on a soggy, swampy Wednesday morning. I'm Bill Small here at the mighty 690 KGGF. And as is our typical fashion, it's Wednesday morning, so we're joined by some experts from K-State. Joining us, we've got Francis Graves. Good morning, Francis.
Good morning, Bill.
And we've got a David Scruntz. I don't know why that was so hard to say, but I should have practiced it first. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here with us. And lots of stuff to talk about today. For instance, Francis is going to discuss grant writing. I mean, when I think of grant writing, I really don't know what I'm thinking about. So I know that researchers have to get their funding from various sources. What all is involved in the process of grant writing?
So not just researchers. We see most of the grant needs in our area in Southeast Kansas coming from community groups.
Okay.
So maybe the city itself or just a community betterment group or a nonprofit, you know, committee that puts on a festival every year. Those types of organizations are looking for grants. And you know, they're just basically trying to fund a project. You need the money.
Mm-hmm.
You see a need in your community, and that's why you look for a grant, is to try to pay for that, to put that project into life.
See, my tie-in with the whole subject, for about 6 years, I worked for the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, and the various institutes were always looking for grants to help fund their various research operations.
Yep.
What are some of the more common things that need to get funded?
So we see, like I said, a community festival. A lot of times people are trying to fund a park. They have equipment they're trying to purchase. They're trying to build sidewalks in their community. They're trying to make their place a better place to live, right, largely.
What are some of the challenges that the grant writer faces? I mean, just getting started, I imagine, is a challenge in and unto itself.
Yep, so it can be intimidating. We have a class coming up at the end of June for people to learn about writing a grant, and you get to actually practice it. So the goal is to leave ready to write your first grant, knowing where to look for grants. That's a big source of confusion for people, because you might hear of one or two things, but there are hundreds of grants available, of course. So discovering those sources of funds, where to find the data, because you open up that application and it's not just, you know, one paragraph type of thing. They often need you to support why this is a problem and why they should put their money behind
you. Yeah, you have to at least sound like you know what you're talking about.
Yep,
and prove what it is
that
you
want.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and there's going to be a workshop on this, a virtual online workshop?
That's correct. We always offer these workshops every year through Extension. And this, and during COVID, we moved them online, and it's actually proved to be pretty great because there's so much material as part of this class. And this way, instead of leaving with handouts, you actually have downloads that you can save, and you can bookmark all the websites that we discuss for doing that research and finding those grants. But it's Tuesday and Thursday, June 28th and 30th, from 1:30 to 4:30. So it's a few hours each afternoon. It's $60 and it's delivered over.
Can I apply for a grant for that $60?
Well, I think there may be scholarships available through K-State, but it's a small investment to hopefully help you earn thousands for your organization. And it's delivered over Zoom, so you get to see people. It's interactive, it's live. But then there's also the Canvas side, which is how K-State students take their online classes.
Mm-hmm.
So you log into a website and you have all of these videos and slides and links just right at your fingertips that you can access anytime.
I imagine we can't overemphasize the importance of having all our ducks in a row when we're applying for a grant. What are the building blocks of an excellent grant application?
I'm glad you asked, because a lot of people...
Well, it was written right here.
Well, they get in. It's one of the most important parts of this workshop, you know. You want to bring people together. A lot of people think, I know what's best. I'm going to fill out this grant application. But grantors want to see that you've built community, that you are not the only one who sees this need. So multiple groups, who else cares about what you want to do? Try to get them on board. You want to solve an important problem. Like I said, you need to have some data about the people or the place that your problem will solve. You want to be able to show them how you'll evaluate success, because it's a financial investment for them to give you this money.
Oh, yeah.
And then budget. You have to be realistic and detailed. And remember those partnerships. So even if all you have is volunteer labor, that's still something to put in your budget. And you can Google how much labor is worth in your area. It's typically $20 to $30 an hour. So if you've got someone who's willing to help for 10 hours, that's a $300 line on your budget that person is volunteering for.
Is there a resource for someone who's doing this maybe for the first time? Is there a template to be followed? Is that just what this course, seminar is going to be all about?
Yep. So in this course, there are templates that are provided to you. So you can learn, you can follow a script to tell the story of your problem.
Like here's a template for a grant application that was funded.
Yep.
Make yours look like this.
Exactly. You're given an example for a local community foundation grant, which is oftentimes the entryway. You know, Walmart has really easy grants to apply for, but then our local community foundations make the process very approachable. So you're given an example that you can take and copy, as well as, you know, different types of budgets so that you can make one that fits what you're trying to do.
You mentioned Walmart. What are some of the other sources of money for these sorts of grants?
So most of the stores that we shop at, or the companies we use, like for our cell phones, they all have like a corporate giving arm.
Mm-hmm. And it's good for them too.
Yes, exactly. That's part of their mission. So you want to look up and see like, what is Verizon trying to accomplish with their, you know, nonprofit arm? And then how does that match what I want to do, and write your grant in that phrase? Also foundations, like I said, community foundations, small local ones. There are national foundations. Nonprofits are also big and small, and then government entities. Those grant applications are a little more complicated, but that's where
you're dealing with
is.
The government, you know.
Yeah.
They're not used to just throwing money at anything.
True.
Make sure they're getting a little bang. Well, maybe they are.
There's a lot of reporting to make sure that money's spent the right way.
That is for sure. Okay, and the grant elements we're talking about is, first you identify the problem, and then what you anticipate your outcome will be. What sort of activities, what do we mean by activities when we're laying out the grant application?
So you want to tell them step by step, how are you going to accomplish this goal? Mm-hmm. I mean, I serve on a community foundation board, and I've read those applications where people say, give me $3,000, I want to do this. And those are never
ice cream.
Yeah, well, they're never funded. You know, you have to say, step one, we're going to get, you know, these people together, or we already have, and this is what we found so far. And then we're going to, you know, break the ground. We're going to bring in the equipment. We're going to lay the playground equipment, just breaking up those things into bites to show that you know what you're doing.
And this is going to be presented by Nancy Daniels, Community Vitality Specialist. What can you tell us about her?
So she
she's probably listening right now, so be very careful.
She's got a background. I think she might be in Alaska right now.
Oh, okay. we're on the web. You know, she could be listening
that's
up there right now.
That's true.
I want to just keep my ear open and find out what Frances has to say about me today.
Yeah. Well, she did know we were talking about this today because she's a great partner, and the class is 2/3 of the way full, so there's still room, but she's a specialist who does this all over the state of Kansas for K-State, and she used to work for nonprofits, so she has a good background in this type of work and knows exactly what people are looking for.
Okay, is there a deadline for which to register for this?
You can register up until we fill the class, or up until the day before the class.
So how many seats are we talking about?
We've got, I think, 25 seats that we keep for the class.
Okay, excellent. It's the Grant Writing Workshop. It's going to be Tuesday and Thursday, the 28th and 30th, from 1:30 to 4:30. It's going to be a Zoom video conference and a Canvas online KSU class platform. $60. And how do folks register for this?
So they can register need to register online. And you can go to our website, wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu. It's in one of our event tabs. You can go on our Facebook page for the Wildcat Extension District. And there's an event on there that you can link directly to the registration page.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll say hi to Adavin. And she's going to talk about pond scum today. One of my favorite things to talk about, especially when the weather is like it has been. I imagine there's going to be plenty of unwanted aquatic plants growing out there.
Yes, David's going
to tell us all about those. What are the good kinds? What are the bad kinds? And what we can do to sort of keep this whole thing under wraps as much as possible as we continue here in the mighty 690 KGGF. We're about 2.5 minutes away from 8 o'clock here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. I'm Bill Small, joined in studio by with Francis Graves and Davin Skrantz. And Francis, we just wrapped up talking about the grant writing workshop K-State is putting on. It'll be Tuesday and Thursday, June 28th and 30th, 1:30 to 4:30. And it's $60. It's going to be a Zoom class. I think we covered everything, or is there anything else you want to just let folks know about?
Yep. The most important thing is just get started. If you're trying to solve a problem and you want
Inertia is a difficult thing to overcome.
Find some people that feel the same way as you and just try go for it.
You look at this thing, you say, okay, this is what I have to do. And it just looks so huge at the outset. But once you actually get started, put your head down and shove. Next thing you know, you got the wheels rolling, and you're well on your way to success. So, again, where do folks go to register for this?
So just go on to our website, wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu. The grant writing workshop is at the end of June, as Bill said. Yeah. So just look on our event calendar or our Facebook page. There's a link to register directly through that.
Well, we're going to break for news here at the top of the hour here on the Mighty 690, and then we'll come back and we'll chat with Davin Skrantz. And just kind of jokingly saying, and she's going to be talking about pond scum, which is kind of really what you're going to be talking about, ways to control or mediate the problem, or even if it is a problem. I would imagine in some cases you want a little bit of vegetation, but then again, the frogs need someplace to hide, you know. So we'll talk about all of that. I did hear one of your reports on the that we air talking about this subject. So I know you've got a lot of information to share with us. Flood watch continues. Heavy rain today, 73 for a high. Thunderstorms likely tonight, down to 56. That's good for the aquatic vegetation. And then decreasing clouds tomorrow and a high of 72. We are the Mighty 690 KGGF. It is 8 o'clock. About 11 minutes after 8 o'clock on a Wednesday morning, flood watch continues. 67 degrees right now here at the Mighty 690. I'm Bill Small. And we're visiting with our friends from K-State. Visited earlier with Francis Graves talking about a grant writing workshop coming up. And now we're going to turn our attention to aquatic vegetation. And our expert on that subject is Davin Skrantz. And I guess I think back to when I was a kid. We'd go frog hunting, toad hunting, and that sort of thing. And, you know, the ponds are always, one hates to say scummy, but that's what they were. Is aquatic vegetation in and of itself a bad thing for the pond or for the environment of that certain habitat? Or are there some that are more beneficial than others?
Yeah, that's a great question. So aquatic vegetation on ponds this time of year will become more prevalent as temperatures get warmer and there's more sunshine. Mm-hmm. And also with some types of aquatic vegetation, algae especially, the rain that we've been getting and the increased runoff to those ponds can be a contributing factor as well. So aquatic vegetation, especially the aquatic plants that tend to be more around the bank of the pond, can be a good thing because they help filter out the excess nutrients in the runoff, especially if the pond is close to fields or pastures where fertilizers may be applied, or even close to a road. The runoff from the road can be detrimental when it comes to increasing the nutrients and increasing aquatic plants in the pond. The problem with aquatic vegetation is, like anything, there can be too much of a good thing. So when you get too many aquatic plants, when that vegetation becomes too prevalent, then it gets referred to as aquatic weeds or right. pond weeds. And that's when you don't want it in your pond, especially if you're using it for fishing or you want to be able to swim in your pond.
Yeah, nothing like jumping into the pond and coming out looking like the swamp thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's when it really becomes a problem. Or even some aquatic vegetation like lily pads, mm-hmm. those can be pretty on your pond. Some people like to see them on their pond, but I've also seen instances where they get out of control mm-hmm. and they're just about covering
yeah.
a pond.
Like any other creature, you know, it's going to multiply if the conditions are right.
Yes.
What are the different kinds of aquatic vegetation that you concern yourself
yeah,
with?
Yeah, so there's a couple different kinds. Of course, there's algae. There's the blue-green algae, which unfortunately we'll hear about in the summer, that's harmful to people and livestock. It's always bad. It's never good.
I remember living in Southwest Florida. We'd every now and then we'd get a bloom of red algae.
Yo,
and,
yeah.
And that's that'll choke you. I mean, the fumes that come off of that will actually cause respiratory distress. Is there anything like, you said blue-green algae.
Yeah.
Do we have any red algae in this area? Or?
Nope, we don't.
Thank you.
Yeah. We just get blue-green and then, of course, the regular green algae, the filamentous algae, which doesn't produce toxins. It's not harmful, but it can really cover a pond. So then there's the floating plants, and these are plants that are not attached to the bottom, and they come in various sizes. A common one that you'll see in ponds is called duckweed, and it's very, very small, about the size of confetti or a little smaller. And sometimes it's, from a distance, it can look like algae because it's green and floating on the top of the pond, but when you get closer to it, it's actually individual little tiny leaves. But there are also other types of floating plants. And then there's submerged plants, which are rooted plants, and most of the vegetative mass of these plants is below the water surface, although in some instances you'll see parts of the plant come above the water surface, especially when you get a large population of these plants.
Yeah, just enough to snag up your fish line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then there's also emergent plants, which are rooted plants, usually along the shoreline, that stand above the surface of the water. So these would be cattails, lily pads, plants like that.
Okay. How does one go about treating one's pond? Is this something that should be done all at once, or should you treat different areas of the pond at different times? Or what's the current thinking on that?
Yeah, that's another good question. So it's recommended that you don't treat the whole pond at once, that you only treat half the pond at a time, or if it's a bigger pond, treating a third to a quarter of the pond
at a
time.
What do you treat it with?
So this would be when you're treating the pond with aquatic herbicides labeled to kill the weed or the plant that you're dealing with. And this is because the herbicides, most herbicides that are labeled for aquatic plants that you'd be using on your pond, the herbicide itself isn't harmful for fish.
Or the toads or the turtles.
Exactly. However, when you treat your pond with this herbicide and it does its job, it kills off those plants, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
As those plants die off, they affect the oxygen level
right.
in the pond and decrease the oxygen availability. So that can be harmful to fish in the pond. And that's why you want to only treat no more than half the pond at
the
time.
That way the fishies have another side to go hide in and not
exactly.
be treated. Yeah, not have to deal with all that lack of oxygen and such.
Exactly. Yeah. And the other important thing when treating your pond for aquatic weeds is to properly identify those aquatic weeds. And that's where I come in.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I'm looking at these green globs of goo out there, I don't know what I'm looking at. I would call you or somebody in your department to help me identify
Yeah, exactly. You can give us a call at the extension office, and I can identify that aquatic weed for you. That way, if you choose to go the route of a herbicide, then it ensures that you're getting a herbicide that is labeled to kill.
You'll turn us on to the right stuff, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And if you prefer not to go the route of herbicides, there's also other control options, such as mechanical or physical control, which usually people don't want to go with because they are pretty labor intensive. It usually involves using a rake, or they even make spears that have sharp edges on them that you can throw out into the pond and pull back, and it will take those aquatic weeds to the bank so that you can pull them out of the pond.
But if you're like most farmers I know, this time of year you've got better things to be doing than out there fishing algae out of the pond.
Yes.
You have a website that folks can go for more information? Or
yes, they can visit our Wildcat Extension District website, and they can find some information on there as well. Or you can reach me at the office at 620-331-2690.
Okay, Dave and Scrant's telling us everything we need to know about that aquatic vegetation. It's good, it's bad, it's a little bit of everything.
Yes.
Just like farming, I guess. Just like the environment here in southeast Kansas, northeast Oklahoma. Where the hell are we at? Anyway, so thanks for joining us. And again, why don't you give us the website and the phone number again?
Yes, our website is Wildcat Extension? Wildcatdistrict.kstate.edu. And you can reach us at any of our offices. The Independence office number is 620-331-2690.
And Francis, why don't you give us again the information on how to get in touch with you for the Zoom grant writing workshop.
Sure. So that same website, wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu, or if you're on Facebook like most people are, you can Google Wildcat District.
Unfortunately, yes, we're all on Facebook
yeah,
these days.
All of our events are listed there, as well as links to information like what Adavin's talking about. Our grant writing workshop has an online registration, so you can click straight through there to get signed up.
All right. Well, thanks for taking the time to swim into the radio station today and share this great information with us here from K-State, here in the Mighty 690 KGGF.